Good evening. This is Alicia Bales, and I'm in the studio for a special Tuesday evening open line show. Tonight we have 2nd District County Supervisor John McCowan live in the studio with us. He'll be with us for the whole hour to talk about current issues facing the Board of Supervisors and to take your calls. Lines will be open starting about 7:20. And the call-in number here in the studio is 895-2448 if you'd like to join the discussion. So, John, welcome to KZYX. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
You had an eventful Board of Supervisors meeting today. Do you want to talk about some of the stuff that went on today at the Board of Supes?
Well, it was quite a jam-packed agenda. One notable event, we adopted a resolution declaring the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day. So henceforth, that will be part of the official county calendar for holidays. In the afternoon, we had a large contingent of tribal members who attended and spoke to the measure. It's, I think, in some ways, it's a small step to acknowledge and start correcting historical injustices and wrongs and begin telling the truth, but it's an important step, and I am confident it'll lead to greater cooperation between the county and tribal members. And it was very well received by the tribal members, many of whom spoke to the issue.
Yeah, it sounded like it was an emotional day.
Indeed, it was. The resolution is online with the county agenda, and again, it acknowledges the historical wrongs, and it's a small step in acknowledging the truth of what happened and acknowledging the people that have been here for thousands of years before us, both their historic and current contributions to life in Mendocino County, and it's some people referred to it as a healing step. I can only imagine the feelings that it would give to Native peoples to see the nation celebrate as a holiday the arrival of a perpetrator of immense cruelty upon the Native people that he encountered. And then, of course, hundreds of years of genocide, displacement, and imprisonment followed from that, numerous injustices. And so, again, it's a good step moving forward, very well received. We also very significantly adopted a memorandum of understanding with SEIU. It's a three-year agreement, very significant. Over the term of that 3 years, everyone will get a 3% annual cost of living increase. Plus, over the 3 years, everyone who is out of market, according to the market study that we did, will be brought up in steps to within either 90 or 95% of the market. Those classifications that are such as social services, where it's primarily state-funded and federal, they'll be brought to within 95%. The general-funded employees will be brought to within 90% over the three-year period. We also approved an agreement with the public attorneys. It was similar, except because they're all one classification. The percentage increase each year could be spelled out. And cumulatively, with the market rate adjustment and the COLAs, it will be a 35.8% increase over the 3 years. And the representatives of the bargaining groups were very pleased. You might have heard a week or two ago, the attorneys were talking about striking.
I did hear that.
SEIU was complaining about delays. The delay was that the supervisors really wanted to know exactly what are the numbers, how can we free up the money to go as far as we can. It was important to identify exactly what the implications were for general funded versus some of the non-general funded. Once we got that information, which I believe was only about 2 weeks ago, we were able to quickly reach agreement. And frankly, I think the employee groups and maybe the board were a little surprised at how far we were able to go. But I think it shows a real commitment to both recruiting and hiring qualified employees and retaining those that we have. They are the most valued asset for the county. The board made a commitment to find the money to make these agreements work.
I did see a reaction from the SEIU 1021 president today. She was very pleased with the agreement that was reached. Let's differentiate here, too, because you have a number of bargaining blocks, right? You have a number of groups that you'll be coming to negotiations with over the next few months. This is SEIU 1021.
Correct.
And who does that union represent?
Well, it represents quite a number of employees, the majority of our employees. So most people working in health and human services, most county road department, within the sheriff's office, it would represent receptionists and staff assistants. So kind of across the county, there's a sprinkling of SEIU members, but they are probably concentrated in HHSA and Department of Transportation.
Does this agreement today bode well for the upcoming negotiations? I know there's an SEIU 2015 who represents the in-home social service workers. They're in contract talks with you guys now, too.
Correct. And they are in a different category than the other employee bargaining groups. And we have about eight employee groups altogether. In negotiations, our negotiators stressed the importance of consistency. So I think what you saw today is what you can reasonably expect from future negotiations. I don't think anyone's going to wind up getting significantly less or significantly more. The compensation increase was focused on the paycheck rather than benefits. And so, again, I think it... it's fair to say it probably exceeded the expectations of our groups.
And we had quite a way to go to. I remember seeing a group of employees, SEIU 1021 showed up at the Board of Supes a couple months ago, I think in May or June, when the human resources report came out where they'd analyzed how Mendocino stacks up to other counties and saw that the numbers were quite low and pay-wise. And I remember hearing a worker speaking to the board who said she couldn't even afford to use her benefits because her wages were so low. So it seems like progress.
Well, we had some employee classifications were 35, 40% out of market. So again, it's those who are most out of market will benefit the most, which I think is appropriate. But everybody will, at a minimum, get a 3% COLA each year, each of the 3 years. Now, SEIU 1015. 2015, I'm sorry. The in-home care workers, you know, are in a different category. They're not classified as county employees. I think it's a very interesting thing since the state and the county together set all of the working conditions for these employees. Why are they not public employees? And yet, officially, they're still considered to be employees of the person they're providing care for. So they're in a different category. They have different funding streams that come through the state. We are in negotiations with them. It's still early in the process, but we did hear public comment from several SEIU 2015 members today regarding the jobs that they do, the value of their service to the people they serve, the need for increased compensation, and also the need for training. They don't just show up and help people get dressed or bathe, but they're also doing medication management to a degree. And as the population continues to age, the people they serve will need more services. And Sheila Dawn Tracy in particular spoke to the need to have training for the SEIU 2015 care workers so that they can better serve the people that they are caring for. And we all know the value to keeping someone in their home, both to that person and to society, far more cost effective and far better quality of life to keep them at home. So I'm hopeful we'll be able to improve the benefits and the pay for our in-home care workers also.
So good news on the union front or on the employee front with the county. That's exciting.
Well, yes. And to have a three-year agreement is very significant because that provides stability. You know, when you have negotiations, and sometimes they might go on for 6 months or a year or longer. So again, once we had the numbers, we quickly reached agreement based on the commitment of the board to dedicate significant funding to this. We should be able to reach agreement with our other groups, and this should go a long way towards recruiting and retaining people. And then we will be able to have more experienced, more satisfied employees serving the public, which again, will be better for everyone.
You also heard from the California Public Utilities Commission today, talking something about PG&E and their planned safety power shutoffs.
Well, we did have a brave representative from the California Public Utilities Commission, and he gave a rather generic presentation. And of course, the primary interest of the board was in the so-called public safety power shutoff, which is not really about public safety. If it were, before they approved the utilities de-energizing, as they call it, they would have had in place a template for every community, every business, every citizen. Here's what you need to know. Here's how you deal with these situations. And instead, every homeowner, resident, business, city, county, special district is left scrambling for how do we respond to this. I think it was very irresponsible. He, excuse me, in response to board comments, he said, oh, yes, there will be inconveniences. And first, you know, he said the public safety power shutoff is a life-saving measure. Yes, there will be inconveniences if the power is off and, you know, people might, their food might rot, or it could be hard with your oxygen or something. But, you know, he only referred to it as inconvenience. And that was after it was pointed out with potentially hundreds or thousands of people going out and acquiring generators and maybe not knowing exactly how to safely operate them, fuel them, or store the fuel. And Supervisor Williams pointed out that one of the fire chiefs had mentioned to him he thought there would be four times as many fires caused by the so-called public safety power shutoff as would be prevented. So there's
right, but
really,
guess who wouldn't be liable for them?
So the CPUC is really turning a blind eye to that, and they have a rulemaking process going on now for how do we deal with these shutoffs. It's kind of like cart before the horse or after it, but you know. But yeah. There we are. The gentleman took it all in good grace, but his answers ultimately were no more satisfying or enlightening than those given by the PG&E rep. I also want to acknowledge Supervisor Jurdy for bringing up issues related to our community choice aggregation, where although CCAs can deliver power much more cheaply than PG&E, because of rules adopted by the CPUC, it's only about a 1% offset. And Supervisor Jurdy had some excellent suggestions on how CPUC could move forward to correct that, what I would call an injustice, and re-level the playing field instead of have it tilted in favor of the investor-owned utilities.
So that local utilities can charge less because it costs them less. They're not forced to charge as much as PG&E to prevent competition.
Correct.
I heard you had something to say to the CPUC official today. Something about his relationship with PG&E and lobbyists?
Well, it's obvious to me that the CPUC is very responsive to the investor-owned utilities, and I think there's a long and well-documented history of that. It wasn't anything surprising to me, I mean, to say that. I mean, it's just obvious to those who follow the history of the CPUC.
That they're not regulating PG&E.
They are not regulating in the public interest.
I'm speaking with John McCowan, Second District Supervisor for Mendocino County. This is Alicia Bales. We're having a special call-in show tonight. And in just a few minutes, we'll open the phone lines. The number in the studio here is 895-2448. I've been asking Supervisor McGowan about today's Board of Supervisors hearing and meeting and some of the issues that came up today. But I know there are a lot of issues that the board is facing and a lot of things on your mind as you look at the way that the county government is functioning. So we're going to open up the phone lines and allow you to ask your questions directly to Supervisor McGowan. I just want to get a little background before we open the phone lines about you and your history on the board. When did you first join the Board of Supervisors? When were you elected? And what were you doing before that?
Well, I was elected in November of 2008, and so took office in January of 2009, just in time for the economic meltdown, which was a very difficult time for the county and for everyone. I previously served on the Ukiah City Council. I have served on the City of Ukiah Planning Commission, the County Planning Commission. I was actually on the grand jury at one point. So I've had a long history participating in local county government, city government, and obviously still very involved.
And the grand jury had something to say about the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors. There was a report that came out, I think it was in May, trying to look at who actually runs the county. Is it the Board of Supervisors or is it the CEO? And since you've served in so many different capacities in the county, what's your answer to that question?
Well, surprisingly enough, the board thinks we're running the county. And the one thing that the grand jury didn't delve into is the actual CEO ordinance. And the CEO ordinance does charge the CEO with developing policy recommendations and bringing it to the board. And then, of course, if the board approves, it's her responsibility to implement the policy. And sometimes, often in fact, when items appear on the board agenda, it's pursuant to previous direction that the board has given. Sometimes it's the CEO developing something that she believes is consistent with previous board direction and necessary. Sometimes it's items brought forward by board members themselves. But ultimately, no policy can be implemented without board approval. And the grand jury did not cite a single instance where there's been any deviation from that practice. Now, one thing the grand jury did that I think is very important in that report, they highlighted that the board makes many directives to staff, go forth and do this. We haven't been as good at following through and tracking, were those directives implemented, who is responsible for doing it, what is the timeline, when are those items coming back to the board? So,
what's an example of that?
Well, there's just so many. Well, I'll give you one. The grand jury also highlighted that there is no strategic planning document for Mendocino County, no single document that calls out our strategic planning priorities and how they're going to be implemented. And yet we have numerous plans, but the board actually gave a directive in December of 2018 for staff to come back with a strategic planning workshop in the spring of 2019. Well, since it's now August of 2019, it looks like that directive may have kind of slipped off the table. in part, that's a reflection of how much is really going on with the county, and we're still dealing with a lot of fire-related issues in terms of building greater resiliency for the county as well as recovering. It's also trying to avoid future catastrophe. So there's a lot going on, and yet we've all acknowledged the importance and need for strategic planning, and we look forward to engaging in that process.
All right. This is John McGowan, 2nd District Supervisor for Mendocino County, and we're ready to open the phone lines and take your calls. The number is 895-2448. That's 895-2448, and like clockwork, we have our first call. Hello, caller. You're live on the air.
Good evening. Thank you for hosting the program. My name is Mark Herbert. I'm from Willits, residing at least at present. I have two different questions for Mr. McGowan. I thank you for being open enough to come on and address your constituency countywide. First question is, myself, at least 20 other people that I know, contacted the sheriff's office with the recent helicopter that was coming over Willits at way less than 500 feet, which is the federal limit for a helicopter, PG&E monitoring their lines. It was like being in a war zone for a week, and I'd like to know how and why that was allowed. It was a clear violation of federal law. My second question is, to date, I would like to know how much money has been spent, and I would use the word wasted, in the codification of cannabis ordinance, and how much has been recouped. And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you very much for your time and attention. Remind folks to turn the radio down. Thanks, sis.
Great questions. Thank you.
thank you. On the first question, I think reporting it to the sheriff is probably appropriate, but also reporting it directly to the supervisors would be appropriate so we could follow up. PG&E will have a representative before the board, I think, on the 27th. It was announced today. That's another question we can pose to PG&E.
So next week?
Yes.
Okay.
That was my understanding that that announcement was made today. Cannabis has been challenging to get the program implemented, and you see that not only at the local level but at the state level. I wouldn't say money has been wasted. It's a necessary step to adopt appropriate regulations. We did have an update from the Planning and Building Services Director today. There are 227 permits that have been issued. There are 926 that are in process. 856 of those are complete, except for documentation from either Fish and Wildlife or the State Water Board. Now, because they may send a completed and approved lake and stream bed alteration agreement to the applicant, but they don't forward it to the county, it's possible the applicant may have these documents. So the department is sending letters out to these 856 people saying, if you have your sign-off or your permit from Fish and Wildlife or the Water Board, you need to provide it to us so we can complete processing your permit. But the reality is probably many of those applicants don't yet have the documentation from the state. That's an ongoing issue that Senator McGuire is actually working to try and resolve. As to money spent with any program, there's a large amount of upfront money that needs to be spent. And I think you need to break that into two categories. So one of them, we did spend money developing the opt-in, opt-out program. We also spent money with the initial study and mitigated negative deck that led to adoption of the program. Those are startup costs that you just have to bear. In terms of the permitting process itself, the revenue realized, the revenue expended, I actually believe the county is in the black on that. I neglected to ask our treasurer tax collector today for an update, but a month and a half ago, the cannabis business tax had generated about $1.5 million, I believe. And add into that the application fees, which are intended to cover actual staff time. And it's unknown yet. We haven't don't have enough of a track record to analyze if that's true or not. But if you take out the startup costs of the initial environmental documents and the opt-in, opt-out program, and you just look at what have we spent regulating it, I do believe county's in the black.
All right, we have another call. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, yep, you're live on the air with John McCowan.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. So I have two questions. One is about the how cannabis got moved from the ag to building and planning department. And it just seems to be really confusing. And how come it didn't stay in the agricultural side was question number one. And I have a comment about the north end of town. I'm not sure if his district line includes the north end of Ukiah, where the new truck stop is. But it seems to me that there is a lot more oil infrastructure being built at the north end of town. And there's no carbon sink being added to it. Like, there was no trees at the new Chevron station. We're not requiring any electrical infrastructure at the Costco or the Chevron station. And I'm just wondering, bringing all this oil infrastructure with no anti-idling law, how does he see his constituents on the Lover's Lane area being able to stay healthy and breathe, and what the consequences might be for that as far as asthma and the clinic goes? Thank you.
So first of all, the ag program moved to planning and building because key cannabis staff members working in ag took jobs over at planning. And one of our challenges has been finding appropriate management for the cannabis program. I won't go through the stops and starts we've made there. I do believe we have a good team in place now at planning and building with our director, Brent Schultz, our cannabis program manager, Sean Connell, and I think we're finally getting a handle on how to appropriately implement that program. But that's the answer. Key staff left the ag department. There was nobody left there to run the program.
There wasn't any policy reason why it moved from ag to planning and building?
Not really. It was primarily driven by staff that were hired to run cannabis chose to migrate to planning department. So that's really how it happened, you know. With regard to the truck stop, that is actually in the county. And frankly, it's a weakness of the county ordinances that there aren't adequate landscaping requirements in place. And I think that's certainly one of the first things that the Climate Action Advisory Committee, which I've been championing, can look into. Costco is actually within the city of Ukiah. They did plant a number of oak trees down by the wetlands there. I think much more of the landscaping we could look forward to. We need to be planting trees. First of all, indigenous to the region, like oaks. I love oak trees. You get them established. They don't need a lot of care. We should be planting more trees that are native to the area instead of trees that might look ornamental. They might look nice, and they have maybe a 50 to 70-year lifespan or something. So, you know, I agree with the caller. We need to do much more in that area.
Well, speaking of the Climate Action Advisory Committee, full disclosure, this is Alicia Bales, program director here at KZYX, and I was part of drafting and proposing the Climate Action Advisory Committee, but it was approved by the county. You did sponsor it, and now you're at the point of appointing members to this committee. Can you talk about where we are with that?
Sure. And as you say, you were part of the Climate Action Startup Group. You did develop a document called Mendocino County's Commitment and Mission for Climate Change, as well as a document recommending a structure and protocols and process for the committee. The board did endorse all of those documents, did approve the committee. We are now appointing members. We appointed two more today, brought forward by Supervisor Carrie Brown, both excellent appointees.
Do you know who?
John Nickerson, with a background in forestry, and Mac Lajowski from Mendocino College, with both with extensive backgrounds in climate action planning and implementation. So we now have four appointed members. I expect in the next couple of meetings we'll see that committee completed and be able to begin its work. And did that answer your question?
Yeah. Who else was appointed?
Marie Jones and Michael Potts were appointed at the nomination of Supervisor Jurdy from the 4th District.
And in all, it's going to be 15 appointments,
correct,
three from each district. So have you been receiving a lot of applications for that committee?
As of last Friday, there had been 31 applicants. And this is the type of thing, it's open until filled. So someone could still submit an application tomorrow if they would like. And multiple applicants in each district, of course, and I'm in the process of interviewing those who have applied in my district. I've got some excellent candidates. It's the challenge is you only have three slots and you'd like to appoint more, but I look forward to the committee being up and running. Now, one of the challenges that the board agreed to was to fulfill certain interest areas representationally, like ag, forestry, labor, environmental, and also cultural and social diversity. And given that we each bring forward our own appointments, it's a challenge to fulfill the conditions that we agreed to for that committee. I would have rather had a broad board discussion of it, an open session, so we knew, okay, I'm bringing forward a forestry rep, do you have labor, et cetera.
Right, and particularly Indigenous representation, Latinx representation on the committee.
Absolutely.
The communities that potentially are going to be the hardest hit by climate. We have another caller. Hello, caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything mentioned, even when talking about power outages. I didn't hear any mention of solar panels and solar systems. I thought by now I would see buildings slathered with solar panels in Ukiah. And instead, I see more gas stations, hordes of cars. And I'm kind of concerned about what's happening to our town. It's like starting to look more and more like a sort of sleazy American town. And I don't know what the planning commission is like or what. It just looks like they're just accepting anybody who wants to put in anything like a gas station or whatever. And I also wanted to just mention that people who like to work with PG&E, if they put solar panels up on their roofs, I get the system together, which is not really that complicated, and it's proven to be much less expensive than all the energy things we're using to pollute the planet with. They can sell their energy that they don't use back to PG&E, you know, if they want to continue working with them. I don't, you know, Germany's almost totally 100%, and they don't have the alternative energy. They have some milk, too.
Well,
climate here, and I don't understand.
Oh, sounds like we lost you, caller. Sorry about that. There was something with the phone line.
Well, I think many of those comments are valid. I've been a proponent of the county should be solarizing our rooftops and our parking lots for years. We finally have a board majority willing to say we need to incorporate that. So I'm optimistic we're going to see significant solar projects by the county. For instance, HHSA, with a large barren asphalt back lot, why don't we have covered parking with solar on top, which would save in a variety of ways. The issue of solar, however, with the public safety power shutoff, where that solar power feeds into the grid, they will be knocked out also. That's not a reason not to move forward and do solar. And I've said more than once that we ought to be requiring solar for major commercial structures. Why aren't we requiring that they be solarized? And yet there's thus far not been the political will to do it. Maybe that'll be a recommendation from the Climate Action Advisory Committee.
MCAC. How big is your district? Where does it cover? The caller was talking about Ukiah and policies in planning and building in Ukiah, but you're not kind of responsible for the city of Ukiah, right?
Well, it's interesting in that my district does consist largely of the city of Ukiah. In fact, every resident of the city of Ukiah is in my district, and then just a little bit more north and south of town. But so it's an interesting dynamic where I'm the representative of the city population, and yet the people who live in Ukiah get their services primarily from the city, except, of course, all of the health and human services, the criminal justice system, other than law enforcement, are all provided by the county. But it's an interesting dynamic.
Right, and you must have the smallest geographic distance.
It's a postage stamp compared to the others, yes.
The sprawling other districts. All right, I'm on the air here with 2nd District Supervisor John McCowan. We do have the phone lines open, and the number is 895-2448. We're ready to hear from you if you have a question for Supervisor McCowan. That's 895-2448. Feel free to call in. I have plenty of questions myself.
Let's talk a little bit about the grand jury. They also made a report on Measure B asking, where are we? And it's been somewhat frustrating. It's been nearly 2 years. In November, it'll be 2 years since Measure B was approved. Money was first collected April 1st.
And remind listeners what Measure B is?
Measure B is a half-cent sales tax for improved facilities and services for mental health, championed by Sheriff Allman. And the Measure B committee took a while to get untracked. They've made a number of recommendations to the board, which the board quickly adopted. One, to have Lee Kemper do a gap analysis of mental health services in Mendocino County, to hire a project manager for the facilities that we intend to construct, to issue an RFP for architectural services for a crisis stabilization unit, a crisis residential treatment facility, and a psychiatric health facility. So that's all in progress. But the Kemper report also noted that Mendocino County has crisis services and very expensive out-of-county hospitalization. And while there are an array of services in between, they are inadequate to meet the need. So instead of helping people early in the process and avoiding crisis, unfortunately, many people do wind up in crisis. It's traumatic for them, their families, the community, and very expensive. One of the things the the Board of Supervisors highlighted today, the Kemper report calls not only for constructing the appropriate facilities, but also for developing more supportive housing, substance use disorder treatment, other support services, more full-service partnerships where a mentally ill individual can receive comprehensive and intensive wraparound services to support them. So we have yet to see any recommendations from the Committee for Improved Services, and we are recommending formally now that the Measure B Committee look at the Kemper Report recommendations as an outline of how to move forward with improved services as well as facilities. And if there's something wrong with the Kemper recommendations, tell us what that is. Otherwise, let's move forward and implement them.
Have they given you an indication, or what do you think their priorities are that differ from the Kemper report?
Well,
from your point of view.
Their priorities seem to be we want to get these facilities constructed. We're concerned about how much it will cost to build them and how much it will cost to operate them. But there's a carve-out of that half-cent sales tax the first 5 years. A minimum of 25% has to be spent for improved services. Some of those services could take place in buildings, but these new facilities to be constructed. But we really need to address the relative dearth of services between the crisis line and the out-of-county hospitalization.
There seem to be a number of factors that are contributing to the dearth of services, including the lack of housing and the lack of wage parity. Are those issues that are affecting this? What's causing the gap?
Oh, I think that's part of it. Anyone in Mendocino County recruiting for employment, a question that they're faced with is the applicants often say, where will I live? I think it's been increasingly clear to many people we need more housing of all types at all income levels. So wherever you are on the spectrum, it's a struggle to find appropriate housing. So I'll put in a plug for the housing element, which the county is in the process of developing. There will be a public meeting in Fort Bragg. Don't want to get it wrong. It's either August 21st or 22nd. It should be on the county website. There will also be a workshop on the housing element in Ukiah on August 29th at 5:30 at the Veterans Hall on Seminary Avenue. The Fort Bragg meeting will start at 6 p.m. I believe it'll be at Fort Bragg City Hall.
All right, and the Ukiah meeting is August 29th and starts at 5:30.
At 5:30 at the Veterans Hall.
That's the one with the cannon out front?
Correct. The 1917 German cannon.
The Vets Hall. And so what do you think the housing – oh, we have a phone call. I'm going to prioritize that. Hello, caller. You're live on the air with John McCowan.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to take a moment. My name is Court. To thank Supervisor McCowan. Thank you for the show. But also to thank Supervisor McCowan for the affirmative vote for the SEIU 1021 contract. I understand it was a unanimous vote. It's something that the county's been working with administration and leadership for probably the last 10 years to recoup some losses that happened back in 2007, 2008. And I just wanted to put out there how appreciated it is to know that we're being supported by the Board of Supervisors. And thank you.
Thank you, Court. And you have been one of the most effective spokespersons for SEIU. And I think that spirit of let's get this worked out that you brought to the table and that the current negotiating team brought to the table is very commendable. And it shows both sides were ready to bargain and reach agreement on a long-term agreement that hopefully will provide stability for the county workforce.
That's my hope also, and I appreciate your kind words. I think maybe I laid the foundation for it, but this negotiating team and this executive board for SEIU did the yeoman's work of putting this contract together, and I appreciate their efforts, and I also appreciate your support.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that call. The number in the studio here is 895-2448. Do we have another call? No, that was just the last call going away. All right. Thank you for that call. And what is it like for you on the Board of Supervisors, for you personally, to have people come and advocate? Does it make a difference?
Well, absolutely, and that's certainly our system.
All right, we have another caller. Caller, you're live on the air with John McCowan.
Hi. Just listening to the, and thank you for the program. This is a good idea. I wish it would happen more frequently. Anyway, talking about mental illness, one thing I wonder about is how can I say this in a clear and non-offensive way? Is addiction to the accumulation of wealth, prosperity, property, to the you know, way out of balance with one's neighbors or community, is that considered a form of mental illness? And if not, why? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Well, that's a very interesting question. I don't, you know, I share your concern. And of course, what we've seen, the dramatic escalation of wealth inequality in America, which rewards certain people with far more money than any human being can possibly make any use of. And at the same time, it's driving other people into crushing poverty. So I don't know if that wealth accumulation in itself is a mental illness, but the ultimate effects to the people who are not getting an equitable share of the wealth, where they have to struggle simply to survive on a daily basis, has to be devastating to people's mental health.
All right. 895-2448 is the number. The lines are open. Calling, welcome to call and ask a question of Second District Supervisor John McCowan, who's live in the studio. I'm your host on the special call-in show tonight. My name's Alicia Bales, and we're here for about another 10 minutes. So there is time for several more calls, 895-2448. Go ahead, caller. You're live on the air. Oh, that connection is not good. If you can call us back on a landline, we'd love to hear from you. So 895-2448. Hello, caller. You're live on the air.
Hey, I just was wondering if the supervisors have any opinion on all the funny trails that the planes leave in our skies pretty consistently. You know, I've heard a lot of different talk from different folks about what it could be, and I just wanted to bring that into light and see if we can get into any discussion.
Well, I am aware that's an issue of concern to people. It's probably one that's about 30,000 feet beyond our jurisdiction. I don't know how we would try to get a handle on that.
All right, we have another caller. Hello, caller, you're live on the air.
Oh, super. I've been following the supervisor's meetings recently, and I saw in the local online paper that Sheriff Allman had given sort of an unscheduled update on the marijuana aerial surveillance and raids in the rural parts of the county, the far rural parts, at the last supervisor's meeting. And I'm curious to know whether the supervisors are in possession of the formal request that Sheriff Allman made to the governor for use of the National Guard. I think it would be in the public interest to have that be available to the public, perhaps online, the formal request that the sheriff produced to request the National Guard. If he's going to give an update to the supervisors on the progress, I think it would be interesting to get the original document that he used to acquire that assistance. Do you have a comment?
Yes. My comment is it's been acknowledged that it was a multi-agency collaboration for those raids. I don't know what more would be gained by seeing the formal request for the National Guard assistance. I would like to note that those...
Transparency for the public?
Well, the request was made. I can certainly ask the sheriff if he has that request, if it was in writing. It's probably a public document, if it was. I don't think there's any secret about it. It's a collaborative process that allows the sheriff to more cost-effectively do overflights, identify areas that are ripe for enforcement. I just want to mention quickly, 28 search warrants served. According to the sheriff, 603 separate environmental violations documented. Of the 28 search warrants, no less than 10 environmental violations per location. Unfortunately, because we have tenants in common, there could be three people on one parcel. Maybe one guy's really off the hook and deserves to be raided. Unfortunately, in that situation, if they're on the same parcels, the neighbors that may have had just a few plants probably got swept up in it too.
All right.
I had read online that no arrests had been made in any of those search warrants, so I'd be curious to know how the progress is on that. But, I'd like to see the public document available. If it's a public document and if it's available to the public, sure, the public can go and request either from the sheriff or the state and go through a rather lengthy process. But I wonder if the supervisors might be able to expedite that. That way we would all have true transparency about the action that he requested and the reasons behind his request versus the actual action that he took, and whether they square would be really good for the public to know.
I don't mind asking if the document exists and if it can be made public, and if you want to contact me so I can make sure you get the answer, I'd be happy to do that.
All right. And for that other person trying to call in, go ahead and call back. The line is open. 895-2448. And thanks for that call, caller. And thanks to all of you for calling. This has been a great discussion. Speaking of strange trails, looking up at the Western Hills in Ukiah, there are a lot, and the Eastern Hills as well, there's a lot of strange trails on the ridgetops. There have been a lot of work trying to protect the city from fire.
Well, absolutely, and there's a lot of work being done in the county, but the Western Hills, I have championed that issue, and with the help of Assemblymember Wood, but it's been a collaborative effort with the city of Ukiah, the county, Resource Conservation District, CAL FIRE. And so there is a shaded fuel break that was first put in place in 2004, never maintained. That is being upgraded and extended. There are also, you can see some of the ridgetop dozer trails. I was up there about a week ago. It's actually quite impressive the work that CAL FIRE has done to create those ridgetop dozer trails, which are and there's 9 miles of dozer trails up there altogether, and they're a precursor to prescribed burn. There are some hillsides, 1,000 acres of brush that's 20 feet tall. It doesn't provide wildlife habitat, but it does represent tremendous fuel loading. So the plan is to create defensible space for a community the same way we would do it for our own houses. And there are Supervisor Haschek is working with Brook Trails. There's other areas in the county where we're attempting to provide defensible space for communities.
All right. Well, hopefully that caller's still on the line. Caller, thanks for your patience. You're live on the air.
Hi. Yes, I'd just like to say that I strongly feel that it's time for all board members, as well as the county council, to have the courage and the political will to implement Measure V and implement it now. It's been over 3 years. The will of the people of Mendocino County spoke loud, and we spoke clear in the most democratic way possible, and this is how democracy is supposed to work. And I think putting democracy on hold as part of some sort of wishful strategy really denigrates the essence of the will of the people. And, you know, if the idea is to avoid a lawsuit, it appears to me that there are four principles involved at this point. And that would be the state, the county, the voters of Mendocino County, and Mendocino Redwood Company, And then my question to John is, can you imagine a realistic scenario going forward where Mendocino County will not be involved in a lawsuit, either from the state, Mendocino Redwood, or ultimately the voters of Mendocino County? And if that's your reason for holding things up, I don't think it's a very good reason. And I'd like to hear, if you're not into, I would like you to answer that question, and I'd also like you to express where you are as far as immediate implementation goes and the reasons why you may not be for it. Thank you.
Your question was, I believe, can I envision a scenario where Mendocino County is not involved in a lawsuit? The answer is yes. Supervisor Williams today reported that he had been having discussions with Mendocino Redwood Company. Their representatives addressed the board today. They have an updated vegetation management plan. I'm optimistic that with Supervisor Williams working together with MRC, we may be able to develop an agreement that everyone can support, where the public safety is protected, the will of the voters is upheld, and MRC can still cost-effectively conduct their operations. It's too early to say how that'll play out, but I really appreciate Supervisor Williams reaching out to MRC. So that dialogue is occurring.
All right. Well, with that, we have come to the end of the hour. This is Alicia Bales. My guest tonight has been John McCowan, 2nd District Supervisor for Mendocino County. If you enjoyed this program, make sure to tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. when 3rd District Supervisor John Hashak will be joining me for a similar Open Lines program. And next week, I'll be speaking with 4th District Supervisor Dan Jurdy from the Coast. That's Monday, August 26th. At 11 a.m., as you can tell, I'm trying to make sure that you have access to all of your elected representatives here in the county. And I want to thank you very much, John, for coming into the studio. And special thanks to Jake for engineering. And most of all, thanks to you for listening and for calling in.